You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the world of horse racing every weekday. It is Thursday, November the 26th, and I am up bright and early today because I am off to the Tattersall's foal sale. Really looking forward to a day at Park Paddocks, and the action is hotting up there. And if you want to know more about the sales, don't forget you can check out episode 7 of Gina Bryce's Bloodstock Bulletin, which is available on this platform now and was posted last night. We've been talking a lot about the weekend's action, both at Newbury and at Fairy House this week. We've been talking a lot about the possible benefits to British racing that might be coming our way in the next few weeks and the possibility of crowds returning. I really feel we haven't given due attention not only to the racing in Ireland, particularly at Fairy House this week, we're going to redress that balance very shortly, but also to the situation where the government in Ireland, relative to the government in Britain, whether or not you agree with their position and the tack that they're taking on fighting COVID-19, have been much more unified and much more decisive in the way they're tackling this. And that has meant that there is much lesser likelihood of large-ish gatherings outside at major sporting events. What are the finances of racing in Ireland like? How are they holding up? Well, in a few moments' time, I'll be asking a man with just about the busiest in-tray in sport, the chief executive of Horse Racing Ireland, Brian Kavanagh, who I spoke to last evening and gave me a lengthy and wide-ranging interview. But first of all, I'm joined on the podcast by Jane Mangan, who is based in County Cork. Jane, just give me an idea of how it feels to be at the races at the moment, the mood of the sport in Ireland, and whether you can really find much in the way of optimism.
You know what, Nick? It's hard to find. I won't lie. We have been frustrated for quite a long time, but frustration is changing now. It almost, when you read the contrast of headlines from Britain to Ireland, it's as if we're on different sides of the globe, and obviously different governing bodies will have different decisions. But personally, having conversation with family and friends, we find it bizarre that government or indeed anyone can try and predict 6 months in advance. And particularly with our own government, we're very lucky. When we resumed in June, we were allowed to continue through level 5 in recent months. And obviously, everybody's very much appreciative of that. But we're sitting here now thinking, best case scenario, if we ever got to level 1, which seems like so far away, that tells us that it's best case scenario 500 people at an outdoor event. So when the government came out with their 6-month tiered strategy in September, we were a lot less informed as we are now with regard progress of vaccinations and case numbers. And it's hard to read a headline this week telling us that we realistically won't have people back at the races for 6 months. We have no idea where we're going to be at the other side of Christmas, never mind next summer. So you have to be very careful when making such statements, because you need to think about what the person or who is going to read this and how are they going to interpret this. So if you're an owner, a jumps owner, for instance, and you're looking at the prospect of having not being able to get to the races in Ireland for the entire jump season, you could very well and perfectly well up sticks and move your horse to England and go racing in England if they're allowing you to go there. You have to be just so careful with this, and it is very frustrating from everyone's point of view to think that anybody is trying to predict 6 months into the future with something that we're continuously told is so unpredictable.
Well, however busy and hectic racing jurisdictions are around the world at the moment, I don't believe that there is anyone with a more bulging in-tray than the Chief Executive of Horse Racing Ireland, Brian Kavanagh. In just the last week, Brian has had to reassure the Irish public that controls for anti-doping are moving in the right direction. He has had to move to suggest changes to training centres on the Curra, the world-famous training centre in Ireland. He's also had to move to reassure the public as to the consequences of Brexit after the statement from the British Horse Racing Authority. But all that pales into insignificance, really, when you consider the impact of COVID and whether there might be any fans or meaningful racegoers on Irish racecourses for the first half of 2021. So to that end, Brian, I'm very grateful for your time. I'm guessing the last of those things puts the other three into relative context.
Yeah, obviously the COVID is a huge issue. Thanks for having me on, Nick. Things are always busy and there's always something interesting and exciting coming down the road, so it's not a problem.
Well, listen, just talk about the situation in Ireland for me and just explain the sort of political nuances of why there's no sort of apparent likelihood of fans being on the race courses for some time.
Well, I would be more optimistic about that now than we were probably 2 or 3 weeks ago when we saw the developments with regard to the vaccine. I suppose different governments have taken different approaches to the pandemic, and the Irish government, you know, advised by its medical people, have been very prudent and cautious the whole way through in which they conducted this or tried to manage the pandemic. And the results have been, there for people to see. Yeah, I think generally Ireland's incidence of COVID is less than many other countries, and there's a good degree of solidarity amongst the country about abiding with the restrictions and the guidelines, which of course we're all sick of. So racing has got a lot of support from government in terms of being able to keep going even through level 5 lockdown, which is the highest level of lockdown, and indeed being able to resume back on June the 8th. And I think it's perceived that racing has managed the situation well and professionally and safely, which is the number one criteria. What we're going through is the same as we're happening for all sports. We had a wonderful weekend of GAA matches last weekend, all played in front of empty stadia, which is terrible to see. The same with the rugby internationals and the soccer internationals recently. So there's a limit of even at level one restrictions, 500 people at mass gatherings outdoors. Now, we've been happy to race and thankfully we've raced successfully for the last 7 months, and you know the race courses have done a great job making their environment safe, and they've got through, but obviously that's not sustainable in the long run, and the government are going to issue some advice in the next 10 days or so as to what happens when the current lockdown ends on the 1st of December, and more importantly, what the pathway might look like in the early months of next year.
So this idea that's been mooted earlier in the week that you might not have any kind of fans for the whole of the first half of 2021, you'd be rowing back fairly heavily on that now.
Well, I think the government published a roadmap in September, and they said it was for the next 6 to 9 months, and it dealt with the sort of levels of restrictions that would apply depending on the state of the pandemic. And that did suggest that for at least 6 months, which would bring you to the middle of March, there will be no more than 500 people at major events or at mass outdoor events. But what's happened since then, as I said, is that we've had these three positive vaccine results, which has meant that there's a degree more optimism around the place. We're watching with interest the moves in the UK to reopen sporting events there, and obviously we'll work with government and follow their advice through the process. But yeah, I think there is more reason to be optimistic now than there was a fortnight ago.
What kind of sustenance have you had from the government in terms of relief? Obviously, there's been loans from the British government to British Racing this week to the tune of £40 million.
Yeah, it's been very good, really. They've put up the normal schemes that you would expect in terms of wage supplement schemes for businesses that have shut down or have lost their their main source of income, and a lot of race courses have been able to avail of that. They've given commercial rates rebates, they've given various other incentives to businesses to continue, and that's been welcome. We've a different funding model in Ireland than the UK. Prize money is funded centrally through Horse Racing Ireland rather than from the race courses, so the government funding to Horse Racing Ireland was maintained at its intended level, and that has enabled us to to keep prize money reasonably high, and also to put in place some funds that may be necessary to protect race courses if, for example, Punchestown lost a second festival. I've always said that, you know, or if Galway lost a second festival, I've always said that a race course will survive one shock, and they have sort of reserves and they have the ability to survive that. But if it goes into a second year, you know, you're into a serious situation. So that's been good. And, you know, the government have put a lot of measures at business's disposal, which has helped us get this far.
Brian, how concerned are you about the implications of Brexit? You talked earlier in the week about your reservations that the British Horse Racing Authority and the steering group had advised people not to travel their horses from the UK to the European Union for the first 2 weeks in January. Just tell me why.
Well, it's look, things are going to change on the 1st of January, and we all have to get used to that. I think the industries in Britain and Ireland are so interlinked, Britain, Ireland and France, in fact, particularly on the breeding and sales side, that, you know, we've been able to move seamlessly horses from one country to the other, you know, without any paperwork, without any customs transactions, or without any major tax implications. That will all change, and we accept that, and people get used to that. I think, you know, it's just a case of advising the industry to be as prepared as possible for this. The difficulty we have, Nick, is that until there's a trade agreement, then we don't know, in some cases, the actual practical implications of this, you know, in terms of mutual recognition of stud books, you know, which you have to expect will come, but it hasn't come yet, in terms of the categorization of Britain from a veterinary and a sanitary point of view, which is important for the movement of animals from one country to another. Again, you have to expect that will come in at the level we want it to come into. And then, because Britain will no longer be an EU member, there's new rules in terms of documentation and, in fact, health certification that's needed for horses moving from one to the other, none of which is insurmountable. And we will have to find a way to do it. But, you know, I think everyone is expecting in the early part of the of January that things will be very difficult. You know, ideally, you'd like to see some sort of a transition period, you know, or, you know, things, new arrangements to be eased in gradually. And perhaps, you know, if a trade agreement is reached, then the environment for that type of cooperation or that type of working together is more suitable.
Brian, just finally, at the beginning of the week, you were moved to reassure people that you hadn't dropped the ball on enhanced and more robust drug testing, out of competition drug testing in particular, in Ireland. But you said that you were keen not to rush this process. Can you just explain that for me?
Yeah, the rushing point is one specific point which I'll come to. You know, the area of doping control and drug testing in Irish racing is handled separately from Horse Racing Ireland by a body, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board, formerly the Turf Club. So there's a separate body who deals with regulation and discipline. We provide funding for their budget, you know, which includes the whole area of drug testing. And they've made a lot of progress in that area in recent years in terms of the appointment of a dedicated anti-doping control officer, the use of the lab, the Newmarket lab, which British Racing uses, increased resources and increased levels of testing put into that area in including, you know, a lot of out-of-competition testing of horses and training, hair sampling, blood sampling, as well as urine sampling. So they've increased the number of samples they're doing. The specific area you refer to there is the question of testing on stud farms, which is a further part of the drug testing strategy, which is a new area for the Turf Club, who don't have authority over stud farms. So it is required, because of our constitutional legal basis, it is required a memorandum of understanding between the IHRB and the Ministry for Agriculture to give the IHRB officials powers to go into unlicensed premises and to take samples. And that's a screening process to give assurance to people buying horses in Ireland that they're buying, you know, a clean product. And I'm glad to say that memorandum of understanding was agreed in the last couple of months with the Department of Agriculture, and I understand the IHRB and the Breeders Association have sat down and put in place practical measures. So from the start of next year, there will be testing of horses, not just on the racetrack and not just in trainers' yards, but also on stud farms before horses come into the system at all. So my point was, look, these things take time when you're working with legal issues, and as I said, we have a different legal system and a different constitutional setup in Ireland in terms of property rights than other countries. So you prefer to get it right than to get it quick.
Brian, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, Nick, good to talk to you.
Well, Jane Mangan is still with me. Jane, plenty to digest there from the ever helpful Brian Kavanagh. What did you make of Brian's comments, first of all, on the COVID response? He didn't sound like a man whose glass was half empty, I didn't think.
No, look, Brian is doing a fantastic job, and he's always been close liaising with the government. And look, he seems to have everything, and he's very well informed, and his guidance through this, I can't underestimate how good he has been. But reassurance is everything. And look, going forward, we need to make progress. And I, at the moment, we need to see a bit more of that. And hopefully, come December 1st, when the government make that crucial decision, they won't forget us, you know, because this is a 12-month-a-year sport. This isn't seasonal. The GAA season will finish and they'll have time to recuperate. Racing never stops.
Are you confident that everything that needs to be done is being done?
I am, yeah. I have great confidence and faith in the team that are leading this sport in Ireland, and I think so far with everything that has been done from the ground up, for everybody's being very cooperative, and there's no point, and I don't think there's anything to be gained in being negative. I think we've made the best of an absolutely horrendous situation, but we need to continue to make those strides and make sure that we are doing everything that we can, and we keep the pressure on, and that we don't ever relax, because, you know, This is competitive, and I'm sure the government and the Minister for Agriculture and the Minister for Sport keep the pressure on, because everybody's trying to paddle their own canoe and we don't want to get left behind.
I just want to pick up on Brian's final point about the need for increased and more robust drug testing in the sport. It sounds as though this is quite a slow process, but they are getting there. For you, as somebody who is quite heavily involved in the sales process, how reassured are you by that, if at all?
I think it's positive. Look, I never really had an issue with it before. Obviously, maybe this is coming on, it sounds like it's months in the working, but it then coincidentally is coming on the back of Jim Boulder's comments, but they're only a couple of weeks old. So I think the cleaner the sport, the better. The more transparent everybody is, the better. And the IHRB do a great job. But now that the fact they have basically been given authority by the Department of Agriculture to go into non-licensed premises gives you even more confidence in the product that we provide on a global scale. So, yeah, I think that's a move in the right direction, and probably something that's in the work.
Shall we talk about the racing? Because there's some very good racing in Ireland at the weekend, particularly at Ferry House on Sunday, Jane, where there are any amount of stars on show. Now, given the fact that on this podcast before, you said that a mare called She Wears It Well might yet end up the season top of the pile, I guess you're not going to put me off backing her for the big Grade 1 novice hurdle on Sunday.
I'm not going to put you off. I'd love to know what price you're going to get. Obviously, we'll have declarations on Friday morning for Sunday, but the Royal Bond is a race that has thrown up great horses in the past. And I remember Willie Mullins' words, as soon as she had won in Tipperary, a Grade Three. He was pointing her in this. Now she is in a mare's race on Saturday, a Grade Two, but she looks like she could be up against taking advantage of her gender allowance against the geldings. And if I'm looking at this race, she's the best in the lineup, I think.
Okay, so then we move seamlessly on to a certain horse called Envoi Ellen. Do we need to say anything else other than he just needs to turn up in the novice chase?
Well, it is slightly disappointing, Nick, from seven entries that there's only two trainers represented. Yes, there's a lot of different owners and a lot of different colours, but there's going to be a small field. And I suppose, in all reality, it's down to the fact that Envoi Ellen has frightened away the opposition. And it looks like it'll be a seamless step for another Grade One for him and make it a perfect 11 from 11. I think he's 10 from 10 so far.
And why do you think that there are no meaningful horses, you know, running against him? Is it just people think he's invincible? Are there other opportunities? Are there too many opportunities for this kind of horse?
All valid questions. Realistically, the horses that are capable of taking him on are probably in Gordon's yard. It's interesting that Willie has no entry himself, Willie Mullins, and Henry de Brom had the same. You'd imagine they'd have horses for this bracket. But if I had a novice chaser in the middle distance, I would be avoiding him for as long as I could. Now, the Drinmore often throws up, I remember Larichberg and Delta were coming down to the final fence. William Mullins wasn't involved that year either. Look, and while Lynn is flawless so far, this looks like an obvious stepping stone for him. It is just, what would really give him a race? Probably Shishkin, and that's probably never going to happen.
Let's talk about the most interesting race of all, arguably, which is the Hatton's Grace Hurdle, because the very popular Honeysuckle is up against Saldier, who is fragile but very, very talented. Are you surprised that they're starting Saldier, who to me has always looked like a speed horse, over 2.5 miles for his comeback?
Not really. I think he has to go and slot in where William Mullins wants him to. Look, obviously he could have started in the Morgiana over two, but San Juan looked nailed on for that. So they're bringing him here. Now, look, he's the same official rating as the mare. 159, the pair of them are on, but he has to concede 7 pounds of a gender allowance. And the fact that we've only seen him twice in 24 months. I've often been guilty of underestimating Honeysuckle. And we're going to see Epatant, probably the best mare in training in Britain, this weekend in the Fighting Fifth. And Honeysuckle is the best mare in training in Ireland. She's beaten Benny DeJoe. She's won an Irish Champion Hurdle. She's versatile regarding trip. And she's 5 from 5 at the track in Fairy House. All last season, I was underestimating her. I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Would you venture to suggest a selection in this weekend's big race in England, the Ladbrokes Trophy, or are you inclined to just leave that to the others?
I like the conditional, but he's 9 pounds higher than when he was second in the race last year, and it's a seasonal bow. It's a difficult race to get a handle on, and when that is usually the case, I don't think there's a... Well, I have the utmost respect for Vindication. I don't think there's a Bobsworth or a Denman in there. I'm going to look a little bit further down the line at Copperhead. I think he was put up by a number of shrewdies at Cheltenham preview nights for the staying races, and he ended up running in the RSA. I think they were actually tipping him for the National Hunt Chase, but it didn't work out. He obviously is a horse with plenty of ability and just might be one slipping under the radar in a race that is probably more open than the betting suggests.
Well, one horse that if he puts his best foot forward looks pretty well handicapped in the Ladbrokes Trophy this weekend is Black Op. He's a past entry winner, he's a past Cheltenham runner-up, he's got some excellent novice chase form from last season. He's trained by Tom George, who's with me now. Tom, what sort of preparations he had?
Yeah, he's had an ideal preparation. This has been our plan from the end of last season. Well, obviously we were planning on running him at Aintree last year. We missed Cheltenham especially for that, and consequently his whole season came to an end very quickly. He then had a very long break because he hadn't run since last Christmas time, and he had a nice comeback run at Carlisle. He would have needed it badly that day, but it blew the cobwebs away, and this has been our target.
And just when he started chasing, you know, he was good when he was good, but he could chuck in the odd annoying error. Do you think you've completely ironed that out now?
Yeah, to start off with, over fences, he was getting it when he was getting in tight. He wasn't making any effort at all, but Johnny Burt's done an enormous amount of work with him, as has Henrietta Knight and everyone here. We've done a lot of schooling with him, and we'd like to think we've ironed those problems out.
Henrietta Knight has developed a reputation latterly as really sorting out people's horses jumping issues. What does she do that helps them?
Well, I think it's been with him. She does a lot of work with Johnny, and he hasn't spent for a long length of time there. He just goes there for morning schooling away from home. He'd always been very good at schooling at home. And it's just what I think has really helped him is being able to school in a different environment to what was he wasn't used to. So it's just given the horse a lot of confidence. He's learned how to sort himself out. I think it's given the jockey confidence. Johnny knows him very well now, and they've worked it out together between them.
Johnny Burke is looking more and more assured all the time. What do you like about his riding?
Johnny's an excellent rider. He's got a very good understanding. He's had a great upbringing. His father being a trainer, and he's still seen it from a very early age. He had a big job when he was very young, and he's seen the highs and the lows quite at an early stage in his career. He's only 24, I think, now, and he's really starting to come together now, and he's got a bright future ahead of him. Yeah.
So you look at the race, you look at the opposition, you look at your horse relative to the handicap mark you've been given. How much confidence do you carry into Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, we've had a perfect preparation with him. He's a very high class horse. He's a grade one performer. He's won a grade one, and he's there off the right weight, 11 stone. He's going to be well within his comfort zone. He's got a lot of pace as well as a good strong stare as well. I mean, in the grade one at Kempton last Christmas time, he was staying on again at the end. So I think a step up and trip and the track should suit him.
Now, if this looks an open but not insurmountable task, the Ladbrokes Trophy for Black Op, the task facing Somerville Boy in Friday's long distance hurdle, tomorrow's long distance hurdle, is nothing short of titanic. I can't ever remember a better edition of any staying hurdle in the calendar, let alone this particular one.
Yeah, it's turned into a very good race. Absolutely, I mean, it's as good as you're going to get. He's had a great preparation. His comeback run at Aintree was excellent. Fought it out really nicely over 2.5 miles. 3 miles, I'm sure he wouldn't have a problem getting it. Just in the stairs hurdle last season, he was always running slightly free. Probably rode him more prominently than we could have done in hindsight. Didn't quite get home, but he's become a lot more relaxed. And I don't see any reason why he won't see the 3 miles out properly now.
He's a classy horse. You've tried lots of different things with him. You know, he won a Supreme Novices hurdle back in the day. Do you think that this is his absolute discipline now, hurdles and a trip?
Well, we believe so. I mean, if he doesn't get the 3 miles on Saturday, Friday, he'll never get it in our view. The ground's good, and I believe he will do. Because I said the most important thing about him, he's learned how to switch himself off. And he's got, obviously, an enormous amount of pace with him, having won a Supreme Novices. So I think everything's right for him now.
And you're happy with the way the horse is running? You're happy with preparations? You're all set for a big weekend?
Yeah, the pair of those horses are in great form. They've had a good start. And everything's going right for them. They look great and looking forward to it.
Thanks for talking to me, Tom.
Thank you, Nick.
So my thanks to Tom George. Good luck to him. And my thanks to Brian Kavanagh for his extensive thoughts earlier in the programme. Jane Mangan has been with me throughout, and Jane has a tip for you and a winner for you, no doubt.
Please God, we're going to go to Thurles this afternoon, and the 2:55, it's a handicap hurdle. I'm going to go for Molly Kay. She was a course and distance winner there in October off a mark of 89, and she's competing today off 95. I think she could defy the penalty. She's got Rachel Blackmore on board. She had a recent run at the Curragh where she's only beaten in November. And Molly Kay, I don't think she's going to be favoured, but I think she might be a little bit of value to get us a few bob before the weekend.
Perfect, Jane. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this show, please tell your friends, and you can rate us, review us, and subscribe on all well-known podcast platforms. Please do that. But we will see you again tomorrow. That was Thursday, November the 26th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.